supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Very proud and very happy that the Department of Justice made this decision. We could certainly move forward and continue to make a lot of the changes that we're making.
The investigation began after six patients died at the hospital within a 20-month period. The surprising Flyers with an 8-5 victory over the Penguins in Game 2 of their playoff series. Game 3 happens tomorrow. Phils weren't as lucky in sports, dropping one of the Mets 5-2. And the Sixers were beaten by the Nets 95-89. Union hosts Columbus today at 3:30. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we have a very interesting question of the week. You know those kiwis you buy in the supermarket that are so loaded with vitamin C, so green and pretty? Well, you can grow a variation of that tropical fruit anywhere in America. We'll tell you about all the different types of kiwis later in the show. In the meantime, though, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Marlene, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well today, Marlene. How are you?
I'm terrific, and I'm terrific in Center City, Philadelphia.
Excellent, excellent. What part of Center City?
Actually, South Philadelphia in the Graduate Hospital area.
Yo! Well, it depends on what side of the street you're on there as to whether you technically qualify for South Philadelphia. But you are where Center City meets South Philly. No more exciting place in the world.
That is so true.
What can we do for Marlene in two different places in Philadelphia?
I live in a row house, and I don't get a ton of sun in my little backyard, so I've been doing some rooftop gardening, and I've been trying to grow tomatoes and regular old green peppers, and last year I did lettuce, and the lettuce did well early because, you know, you can't do it when it's real hot, and for 3 years now, I cannot get green peppers to grow. I don't think I overwater, and they never get more than, like, 2 inches, two and a half, not even 2 inches, inch and a half big.
Well, you're insulting them. This is all your fault, Marlene. Do you
call them
green peppers to their face?
No.
Because they are not green peppers.
What are they?
They are, well, they could be hot peppers. They could be sweet peppers. They could be bell peppers. They could be Italian frying peppers. They could be three-lobed peppers. But unlike tomatoes, there is no pepper that is green when it is ripe. All peppers turn a final ripe color. And until they do, they're pretty much bankrupt of nutrition. And that kind of sharp taste you get from a green pepper when you can't get anything else, that's the sign of an unripe fruit that has not developed its sugars and its nutrition. Now, I'm glad that you're doing well with salad greens. And I hope you're working both ends of the season. I hope you're growing those early and late.
I am.
And what's the access like to your roof? What kind of gymnasium? Do you have to climb a rope ladder to get up there or what?
No, I actually have a hatch in my third floor, so I have a regular ladder, and I just climb up that.
Oh, very
exciting.
Open
the hatch. And I do have a hose up there, so the watering is, I'm not as I used to, lugging up pails of water anymore.
And do you have other plants up there besides peppers?
Tomatoes.
And how do they do?
Marginal.
Okay. Now, what are you using? Are you using regular pots as containers, regular, you know?
Yeah, those big wooden barrels.
Oh, really? Half whiskey barrels?
Yeah.
Who hauled those up to the roof?
I did.
Wow. Man, I wouldn't do that. Rolling it up that steps, too, and everything?
Yeah, you know, when they're empty, they're probably not the super big ones, but they're medium size. So, you know, when they're empty, they're really not very heavy.
Whoa, you got to come around and help my house a little bit. I find those things to be, like, frightening. Mm-hmm. And what kind of sun do we get up there? I shouldn't presume, because there might be buildings that shade it.
No, direct sun all day.
Okay. So, and you really can't water by the rock and roll method, because your containers, now that they're filled up and planted, are very heavy, right?
Correct.
How many pepper plants or other plants are you trying to grow in one half whiskey barrel?
Just one.
Just one.
Well, in the tomatoes, I do too. Two tomato plants.
And but that's backwards. The tomatoes need a lot more room than peppers.
It was a smaller barrel.
Oh, okay. So they're not true half whiskey barrels. They're not these monstrous things.
No, they're not the monstrous things. They're smaller ones.
And they do have good drainage.
Yeah.
Okay. And you water them...
The tomatoes I water a little more often. The peppers probably, depending on the weather, obviously if we're not getting a lot of rain, you know, I try to monitor that. So I try to stick my fingers in the soil to
right.
make sure that it doesn't get super dried out. So, you know, at least once a week and twice a week if necessary.
I would think you'd have to water a smaller container on a rooftop maybe much more often than that.
Okay.
So we're going to do two things.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to invest in an MAB paint stick. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I want you to get a piece of wood that shows moisture really easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to be able to push it down to the bottom of the container. And when there is no longer a dark spot on that, when you figure you're around the root zone of the plants, it is time to water. You might also want to take some of those shredded leaves and use them as a mulch on top. And then you may have heard me suggest this to other people in the city. You're going to have to rig up some shade cloth. You're going to have to get a beach umbrella, which you might even have up there for sitting, right?
It's been kind of windy. They tend to blow around.
Obviously, don't leave it open when it's windy, but you're going to have to rig up something to
shade.
Give the plants some afternoon shade. Morning sun is good, but afternoon shade. And are you feeding them at all?
Yes.
What are you feeding them? Something terrible, I have a feeling.
No. It's some organic... I'm not at home right now, so I'm not looking at it. But it was a liquid organic feed.
Huh. Like a fish and seaweed mix.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That should be good. I think the problem might be moisture. I want you to monitor the water situation more. I have a feeling that those containers are drying out too quickly. And give them some afternoon shade. The afternoon shade doesn't even have to be every day. Just when we get into a heat wave, if you could give the plant some relief after 2 in the afternoon, that might be all they need to perk up.
Perfect.
But it sounds like you're doing everything right, and I think you're going to get peppers this year.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, Marlene, good luck.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, sir?
I am doing well today. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. Got a quick question for you, sir.
I have a question for you first, Mike. Where are you?
I'm in Columbus, Georgia, right outside of Fort Benning.
Very good. What can we do for you, sir?
All right. This year, I'm very interested in growing some watermelons for the first time and some cantaloupes. And I have absolutely no clue what's going on with that or the best means of getting a good crop out of that. So I figured I could call and get some good tips.
What kind of a garden situation do you have? Do you have anything constructed?
I had a little garden last year. I tilled up a little 12-by-12 plot and had a couple of plants. But what I wanted to do is have a separate area specifically for the watermelons so that they can vine out and have room to spread.
Yes. So you're not going to start the seeds because it's late in the season for that. You're going to buy plants, right?
Yes, sir.
And do you know what kind of a variety, what kind of choices you have at your local garden centers?
I have absolutely no clue. Is there anything you could recommend this time of year, sir?
Well, actually, because you're going to be a first-year melon grower, for the watermelons, I would recommend that you grow what are called icebox melons.
Okay.
These are the round ones you see in the supermarket.
Yes, sir.
And they are a much shorter season, which you don't need. You have a very long season. But I want you to grow an easy one before, say, next year you move up to the ones that look like little propane tanks.
Right.
Which I have a feeling is what you're gunning up for. And they should almost... What's the nighttime temperatures down in Georgia right now?
Right now, I don't see it getting too much below like 60 degrees right now at all.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been pretty warm down here recently.
If you were going to grow these massive full-size watermelons, the ones that you need a running creek to chill before you eat, they would have been in the ground already.
Okay.
So, because they do take a very long season. These icebox watermelons are absolutely delicious. They have the same flavor, but they're ready like a month, 2 months earlier.
Oh, good deal. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so instead of trying to grow one monster, you'll put like three or four plants of the icebox melon into a raised bed, and you'll train the plants to go out in different directions. You know, make sure the bed has a lot of compost in it. Get a nice organic fertilizer, feed them a couple times during the year. They live up to their name. They need a lot of water if you go through a drought, so make sure you can, like, soak the bed they're in real deeply once a week. Just leave a hose drip in there for hours and hours and hours and have a nice organic mulch on the surface to keep it nice and moist. When the watermelon are ready to harvest, make sure you pay attention to what it says on the plant tag. It may have a days to maturity. Make sure you actually make a mark in your calendar that's like 90, if it says 90 days, mark 90 days from when you put the plant in the ground, because that's the time you want to be paying attention.
Right.
And a watermelon is done. Here's the secret. It's not tapping. It's not thunking. They'll have little tendrils that'll be coming off from the vines in a lot of different places. These aren't the vines with the leaves. These are just little tendrils, like little mouse's tails.
Okay.
When the tendril nearest the fruit turns brown and dries up, the watermelon is ripe.
Awesome.
All right, man?
Good deal. Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it. All right, I'm going to go get some melons.
All right, I hear you, Mike. Good luck.
Hey, thank you very much.
Take care, sir. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and move my pepper and tomato starts into bigger containers. They've been looking pretty root-bound lately. But first, I have to rig up another big light fixture for them to make sure they grow up short and stocky instead of thin and leggy. Oh, and I gotta find those bigger, deeper pots that I always move them into. And I gotta find the tray that holds those pots in place. That's a very specialized tray. All right, don't you go start searching for your setups just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and how to grow kiwi anywhere in the United States. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Burpee. Burpee offers seeds and live plants, edibles, flowers and perennials, treasured heirlooms, and high-performing hybrids. More information online at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY.
Medford Lee supports WHYY. Serving older adults since 1971, Medford Lee's, a not-for-profit community for those aged 55-plus, is guided by Quaker values. Medford Lee's features arboretum settings, a range of residential home designs, from townhouses to garden-style apartments, varied contract options, and comprehensive on-site wellness and health services. Current events open to the public, including campus tours, arboretum programs, lectures, art shows, and more, online at medfordlees.org.
Your part-time controller, specializing in nonprofit accounting, supports WHYY. I'm Eric Frame, President. Details at yourparttimecontroller.com. Your part-time controller, building stronger nonprofits, one accounting department at a time.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, those big egg-shaped kiwi you buy in the supermarket are a very tropical fruit that can only be grown in really warm places in the United States. But there are two other types of kiwi that have the exact same flavor, maybe a little bit better. They got more vitamin C, and they can be grown in even the chilliest places that my voice is reaching right now. We'll tell you about these special kiwis later in the show. In the meantime, lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Robert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Mike?
I am doing well, Robert. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. We're in Jonesboro, Louisiana, and I had a quick question for you.
Yes, sir. You proceed.
Okay. Well, I always had a pear tree at my grandmother's yard there, and she, the limbs would get so big and heavy, she'd cut her a forked stick and prop them up, and she wouldn't dare cut a limb. But I had heard that we really needed to prune these trees, and this is about a seven-year-old tree, and it grows these big yellow pears, and they get ready a lot earlier than most of the trees around there, but it's never had a limb cut on it, and the pears get so big and heavy that the top limbs just hang down and break off, and you can't mow under it, and it's just a big tree now, and I wanted to prune it, but I didn't know how big a limb that I could cut or how close to the base of the tree I could cut, and if I needed to put anything on it after I sawed these limbs off.
All very common questions that are going to help a lot of people. Typically, the pruning you would do is in the dead of winter. Now, your tree is already flowered, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and are little fruits forming now?
Yeah, there are little fruits on it, about big as your little finger now.
Okay. With pear, now, I'm no expert on pear trees themselves, but I do know a lot about fruit trees, and one thing I know about pears is because they are so big and heavy and dense a fruit, what we call the thinning of the fruits right now. I mean, you could not be calling at a more perfect time to avoid the problem this year, man. The thinning of the fruits is more important than the pruning of the tree because pears, as you've noticed, compared to like peaches and other trees, you don't see as many pest or disease problems on pears. And that's what the wintertime thinning out of the branches of the tree, the pruning of the tree, that's what that accomplishes. It keeps the plant very healthy. What you need to do now is very simple. Pears, like most of these big fruits, set more fruits than they can possibly carry through to the end of the season. So your job right now is both tedious and simple, and it's to start removing some of those little pears so that the pears that are left behind have plenty of room to expand and get to full size. You're going to get better tasting fruits even out of this. And more importantly, in your case, the limbs won't be as heavy and they won't bend over and break. You only have to take off enough of the little pears so that you have about 8 inches between the remaining fruits. And that's going to solve your weight problem.
All right.
And you're going to get bigger, better developed, better tasting fruits. And then because the tree is old, I would advise you next winter, in the middle of whatever kind of a winter you get where you are, you don't get much of one, that's for sure, to get out there and open up the center of the tree. You should remove some whole branches in the center. Just take them down to where they meet the trunk. Make sure you leave wherever a branch meets the trunk of a tree, there's like a little collar. Leave the collar on the tree, but take the whole branch off and open up the center of the tree. And to answer your earlier question, you don't need to paint the cuts. You don't need to heal the pruning wounds at all. The tree is really good at that. And not only are you going to be letting more air into the center of the tree, because your summers are legendarily humid down there and you could probably use some air circulation, but you can kind of lower the working height of the tree, if you know what I mean, so that you're not, you don't have to get up on an orchard ladder as often to get pears. And you know, if you ever do have any troubles, they're always up in the top of the tree where you can't take care of them.
Okay, well, that's what I'll do. I'll send them, and next winter I'll trim that tree back. Mike, I enjoyed talking to you, and thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Robert. Good luck. You're going to have a great pear harvest this year.
Okay, thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Dave, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Very good, sir. What can we do you for?
I was wondering if you can clarify some of the information and or misinformation I'm finding about compost tea.
Oh, okay, sure.
I'm starting a garden, a pretty big garden this year, and really the best compost I'm finding out there is the worm compost, vermicompost.
Right.
So I started with that, and I wanted to make a compost tea because I understand that that's one of the best ways you can excuse me administer this. But I'm getting a lot of conflicting information on the different ways to make it, how to apply it, things like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I feel like I can offer so much more helpful advice now that I have worms. I had talked about worm bins kind of theoretically for many years, but last fall I got my own worm bin. And it's one of these multi-leveled things that you you fill up the new trays with garbage and shredded newspaper and shredded leaves, and the worms turn it into what looks like compost. But one of the most interesting things about having one of these big bins in your home is you have to keep the worms moist. You have to be adding fresh water to the top of the structure. And then down at the bottom, there's a spigot that allows you to drain off the excess liquid because you don't want any worms down on the bottom to be drowning. And the stuff that comes out of that spigot is dark and just has no bad odor whatsoever, and you can just look at it and you realize this is the best liquid fertilizer you've ever seen. And I've been using it on my lettuce all spring, and we've never had lettuce whose colors popped like this, that grew so fast, that tasted so sweet. So one of the nice things about a worm bin is that you are always making tea out of the worm castings just as part of the process of keeping the bin healthy. Now, I will tell you that worm castings are different than compost tea. Compost tea refers to the standard compost that you would make with fall leaves and coffee grounds or fall leaves and animal manures. And then you would take a batch of that compost, you put it in a porous cloth container, and then you put it in a big container full of cool liquid for 24 hours, take it out, and then use that liquid immediately. That's compost tea. And what some people will do to pump up that compost tea is they'll drop aquarium bubblers or other things into the brewing water, so to speak, to add extra oxygen to it, because one of the benefits of compost tea is the living organisms in the tea, and they're using up oxygen rapidly. So one way to keep those little fellas active and to get the maximum number is to add extra oxygen, extra air to the brewing water, and then use it fast. If you read the article we have on our website in the Garden Answers A to Z section on compost tea, I recommend people start brewing at like 10 a.m. on Saturday morning and then use the compost tea at 10 a.m. Sunday morning so that it doesn't sit around. You don't want it to sit around and go stale.
Right. So I actually did read a lot of information on your site. So can you make a form of this compost tea with the worm castings?
Yes. I can't see any reason you wouldn't. I would not call it compost tea. I'd call it worm casting tea, but I really am splitting hairs there. And I would follow the same advice. I would pick, like an old sock in a gallon of water, a pillowcase in a, 5-gallon bucket, or, some big burlap sack in a clean rolling plastic trash can. Fill it with cool water, not tap water. I would want to keep chlorine and fluoride out of the mix. I'd want to use rainwater or some other cleaned up water, no city tap water. And then I would steep it for 24 hours. I would use that just as a soil drench, just to water the plants, just get it down there where the roots can absorb it as if it were regular water. And then I would take all that solid material that was still in that bag and I would add it to my working compost pile.
Okay. All right.
I like the low-tech idea of just pouring this stuff into watering cans and, root feeding your plants, because that's how they take up any kind of liquid fertilizer. And this is just great stuff. Although, again, anytime you're working with a disease-prone plant like roses, lilacs, or tomatoes, I would always have a mulch of real compost on the surface of the soil in addition to anything else like this to really keep disease at a minimum.
Okay. That was a big help then.
All right. Good luck, Dave.
Hey, thank you.
Take care, sir.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Judy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you, Judy. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
And
how are you?
I am excellent today. Thank you for asking. Where is Judy very well?
I'm in Hopewell, New Jersey.
All right. Very good. What can we do for Judy in the Garden State?
I have three dogwoods that were planted about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
2.5 years ago, and they were small. So deer guards were put around them. I don't know if that's what they're called, but they were the plastic kind of corrugated solid guards to protect them from the deer coming and rubbing.
Right.
And we took them off this year.
Good.
And underneath, the bark is looking a little not very healthy.
Did you leave the guards, the tree guards, on continuously for 2 years?
Yes.
Yeah, they're supposed to come off in the summer. Those are mostly for winter protection. When trees are young, their bark is attractive to a number of different mammalian pests. A deer will eat the bark off a very young tree. It is it's not woody, as you noticed, like an older tree. So it's actually pretty good food. Rabbits are notorious for gnawing the bark off young trees. So typically we protect the trunk of the tree with either wire or plastic in a cylinder over the winter. But then after the tree leafs out in the springtime, we typically take those off to allow for growth so that the tree isn't restricted in its growth by the tree guard or, God forbid, actually gets girdled by it. Some trees that were planted and then abandoned, the tree will actually grow into the tree guard.
Oh, yeah. Well, that didn't happen. They did not fill that guard, but it appears that maybe from the heat or something, the bark just does not look very healthy. It's not solid. It's kind of broken up and patchwork.
But when did the guards come off?
About 6 weeks ago.
Oh, okay, okay. And how about the trees themselves? How do they look, the canopies?
They're beginning to leaf, and I think they'll have blossoms.
Now, are they situated in an area that gets morning sun and a little bit of afternoon shade?
They get a lot of sun all the time.
Okay, you know that that's not recommended.
Ah.
Especially now that they're young, they're really not going to enjoy that full sun all day. As they get older, they may shade themselves a little better and tolerate it. But in general, dogwoods like morning sun and afternoon shade. Although it's a delicate balance, especially as they get older, you're going to get the best blooms on trees that get a good amount of sun. But especially when they're young. And this might be a year where if we get a really aggressive summer, you might actually want to give them some shade. When you look at the base of the tree, can you see a nice dramatic root flare, or does it look like a lollipop in the ground?
No, the ball of the root is up a little bit.
Okay, so the tree is planted high. That is great. And is it mulched with anything?
It was mulched. Just with a double shredded mulch last year.
Right, crap wood. And
right.
Was that touching the trunk?
I made sure it wasn't.
Okay, good. And you've removed the mulch or it's just degraded?
It's degraded.
Why don't you rake that away? Dogwoods respond to a mulch of compost better than almost any other plant. When I do my talks on compost, I say to do triage, that if you have a limited amount of compost, there's four plants that I call the drama queens of the garden who get it first, and that's tomatoes, roses, lilacs, and dogwoods. So your dogwoods would enjoy nothing better than a one-inch mulch of compost that begins about 6 inches out from the trunk and then goes out as far as the furthest branch reaches. And then they can utilize the nutrients in that compost to heal up that bark as much as possible. And while the trees are still young, don't be afraid to protect their bark again this coming winter. What might be a better idea is to buy a roll of chicken wire and wrap it around the trunks, but very loosely so that there's a couple of inches open all around. That'll prevent animal teeth or deer antlers from getting at the trunk, but it won't restrain it at all either.
Okay, great. All right.
Good luck, Judy.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and harvest a tray of worm castings from my new this season worm bin system to give my fall-planted garlic a little mid-season boost. Now that my red wigglers are acclimated to their new home, they're turning our kitchen garbage and shredded fall leaves into fabulous fertilizer much faster than I could with an outdoor compost pile. And I don't have to worry about adding too much food waste. They love it. But don't you go crowing about the creators of your castings just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how you can grow kiwi just about anywhere. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Burpee. Burpee has been providing gardeners with seeds, plants, and supplies for growing everything from tomatoes to flowers to gourmet herbs for over a century. More information online at burpee.com. Four degrees in Center City. This is WHYY.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The Trevose Horticultural Society will present a program on ground covers this Monday at 7 at Wood River Village in Bensalem. I'll get you ready for the growing of great edibles and answer all your garden questions at the Hamilton Township Library at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, April 24th. The event is free, but you must register in advance. The Pinelands Native Plant Sale will take place on Saturday, April 28th at the Bishop Farmstead in New Jersey. The Schuylkill Center for Environmental Education will hold their Native Plant Sale on Saturday and Sunday, April 28th and 29th in Roxborough. And I'll appear at the Urban Garden Fair at the Landis Valley Village and Farm Museum in Lancaster, PA on Saturday, May 12th. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Checking the WHYY forecast, looking pretty good today. Mostly sunny with a high of 73. Tonight some showers, the low dipping to 57. Sunday, few showers in the morning, but sunshine in the afternoon. Sunday's high, 83 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens, in just a few short minutes, as opposed to those agonizing long minutes. We'll get to the question of the week and tell every single one of you what type of kiwi you can grow in your own backyard. In the meantime, a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well. Jen, how are you?
I'm wonderful.
And where is Jen wonderful?
I'm in Prospect Park, Pennsylvania, just south of the Philadelphia International Airport.
Okay, very good. And get used to those planes going overhead?
Oh, not too close to me, thank goodness, but
good.
They're there.
You're not in a flight path. Always
no,
nice.
Not that I know of.
No, I think you'd know, Jen.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, what can we do for Jen near the airport?
I bought my home about 3.5 years ago, and my previous owner put some vinca vine in a bed alongside the house. And it was wonderful, and it had little pretty purple blossoms on it, and I loved it. until I didn't realize you had to trim it and basically teach it what to do, and even then it just doesn't care. It just takes over everything. I took over that bed. I cleared the bed out and planted a perennial garden, which is doing well. But the space that I relegated the vinca to is completely overrun. It's in my central air unit. It's in a rambling rose bush I have. It took over an azalea and a hydrangea, and I want to get rid of it and replace it with something else.
I have vinca that I inherited in my property, and it must have gone to Catholic school because it's so well-behaved. I mean, it stays where it's supposed to. Is yours getting full sun or something to, like, make it go nuts?
It's afternoon sun. I mean, I guess it's getting about 5 or 6 hours. I don't know why it's acting like this. I mean, it's just literally in everything.
Well, it loves your property, clearly.
Apparently.
Now, you said you cleared it out of a bed that you planted perennials. Has that bed stayed vinca-free?
For the most part. Every once in a while, it'll start creeping in on the edge. I trim it back, and it's fine, usually for the season.
Okay, good. And you didn't even install edging to keep it out?
No, I was going to, and I just forgot about it, and it doesn't seem to need it there.
Oh, okay. What are you going to plant in place of the vinca once you rip it all out?
Well, that was the second part of my question. I'm not sure what will behave better. I'm kind of a set-it-and-forget-it gardener. I like to put the stuff in and take care of it, but not have to be fussing and pruning and fixing. So I have some phlox in my perennial bed, and I was thinking about using phlox or some pachysandra.
Well, you know, pachysandra is the coward's way out.
Thanks.
It is. It's much more well-behaved.
Right.
You know, it's just, I bet your vinca just flowers like nobody's business, though, because it just sounds so happy.
You know, it looks happy. I've just kind of put this evil face on it because, I mean, I had a nightmare once that it started coming in my house.
Ah! That's great. Was it wrapping around the bedposts and everything?
Yeah. Well, it was just mostly centralized in the basement, but it was like Jumanji. It was like wrapping around the pipes and the hot water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was coming up to pull your bed to the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you finish the nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, God. I hope I don't have that one tonight.
What I would do is put in some edging. Keep it in the places where you want, and just whack it back once or twice a year when it starts to get too big. Obviously, you want to keep it out. You want to keep everything clear around the central air conditioner, and that seems to me like a job for some edging and some mulch, and then you wouldn't be worrying about that. But the other might just be a whack job, you know, once maybe twice a season, whereby the pachysandra is really carefree, it's not going to be as hardy. We do hear a lot about pachysandra dieback and people having to replant it. And I am a lazier gardener than you. In that I would rather whack this stuff back once or twice a year if I had to. I think that's less work than getting rid of this very happy, very aggressive ground cover, keeping it out, and then planting something that's a little weaker. For me, I would just, you know, realize that the vinca is going to take a little bit of time. But if you parse it out, I mean, you're talking about weeks of work to get rid of this and establish a new ground cover.
That makes sense. Well, you know what? Maybe I'll go have a talk with the vinca and tell it it's got another season. I'll leave it.
Yeah, I think maybe
but
you need...
But it better behave.
Exactly. You need to sit down at the negotiation table with this plant.
Okay. Well, that seems fair.
All right, Jen?
Yeah, thanks so much, Mike.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Chris, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, Chris. Good. Where are you, man?
I'm down in Cape May Courthouse, New Jersey.
Oh, very good. Down the shore.
Yeah, it's a good part of the Jersey Shore.
Oh, that was uncalled for.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Everything on the ocean is wonderful, Chris. You should know that.
That's true. That's definitely true. Yeah, my question is, big fan of your show. I think it's really great. My wife and I recently were lucky enough to actually get a house, And one of the things we loved about it is it has some naturally growing moss that grows on the north side, you know, in the shady areas, which is just phenomenal. We're big fans of moss in general. But the problem I'm having with spring is a lot of the actual moss is growing in between some brick pavers that we have, but there's also some weeds coming through. And we don't like using any kind of chemicals or pesticides or, you know, anything like that. But I don't know if there's any other way to help both encourage the moss to grow, but also maybe discourage the actual weeds to grow besides just getting down there and, you know, pulling them all by hand or, you know, anything like that.
Is there any sun getting through to this area?
For the most part, no. It's shady throughout most of the actual day. Some parts of it get a little bit of sun. Maybe right at midday, but not a whole bunch. It's generally a fairly shady area.
Now, you're down the shore. Is your regular soil in the other areas of your landscape, is it fairly sandy?
It doesn't appear to be at the top. We haven't been in the house for very long, so we haven't dug down very deep. We are fairly close to the water, you know, maybe within a football field away, so I'd assume that there might be sand, but we're inland, so it would be more of the organic mud, you know, rather than sand.
Gotcha. As you progress, by the way, as you think about landscaping this house, remember that it is the wind that is going to be the biggest enemy of your plants.
Okay.
You know, that same breeze that brought people down the shore to escape the cities before air conditioning can be very constant and can be very drying for plants, especially in the winter. So think about windbreaks and wind-resistant plants as you proceed. Wind is sometimes a much harsher enemy of plants than winter cold is. Now, the first thing I would do with the moss is I would make sure its soil is staying nice and acidic. So your two choices for acidity are to dust the area with some peat moss, just milled peat moss like you buy in those big bricks at the garden center, or you can buy sulfur, which is used to lower the pH of soil much faster and much lower. It's used for especially by people who are growing blueberries and other plants that require ridiculously acidic soils. Your moss thrives in acidic conditions. So if maybe salt spray is getting to you every once in a while, that's going to weaken the moss a little bit. If you don't get as much rain, that's going to allow the pH to come up. So the more you make that area acidic, the more the moss will thrive and the weeds will be knocked back a little. Make sure that area never gets any kind of wood ash or lime or anything that would raise the alkalinity. You want to keep driving the pH down. And then you could try flame weeding the very tops of the weeds. You can buy a Burns-O-Matic yard and garden torch, a little propane weed burner that has a very long shepherd's hook type handle, automatic igniter. And you would just wave it across the top of the weeds, avoiding the moss. And that would burst the cells in the weed and kill the plant without affecting the moss. Because as you know, when you start pulling this stuff up, a lot of times the moss is going to come with it, right?
Right, exactly. They get intertwined and the moss is so, you know, it doesn't hold on very well. So it just comes with whatever else.
Moss does not really root in the way that we think of. Moss just kind of sits there. It has no invasive root structure whatsoever. So one other option, if you do want to have a pulling party, you soak that area down real well, and then you pull the weeds, and then you just push the moss back into place. But you say these are growing between pavers, right?
Yeah, I mean, on the side of the
house. What kind of pavers?
It's bricks. It's like bricks that are just set in the ground.
You know what? I think I was right the first time. I think it's acidity, alkalinity. I think the pavers are raising the pH, And if you just drive that pH down, I think that'll solve your problem. Make sure that that moss stays acidic. Moss doesn't need to be fed, but it needs shade, moisture, and acidity. And I think the pavers may be working a little bit against you there, but you should be able to counteract it pretty easy.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we are calling You Need a Man to Grow Some Kiwi. Producer Alexis Landis, we picked a couple of kiwi questions this week to get us started. Why don't you read them off for us?
Well, Denise in Morton, Pennsylvania writes, "My son gave me a kiwi tree on Mother's Day 4 years ago. The salesperson said it was female and didn't need a nearby male to flower. The plant seems to be okay, but has not gotten any bigger and has never flowered. Do I need to get another plant?" And Bob and Marika in Emerald Isle, North Carolina write, "We live about a block off the beach and are trying to get our kiwi to produce fruit. We've had the plants, 3 female and 1 male, for about 6 years. We've had blossoms the last few years, but no fruit. Any suggestions?"
Well, there's several types of kiwi fruit, all members of the same genus. The brown-skinned, egg-shaped ones you see in the supermarket can only be grown in regions that are blessed with at least 225 frost-free growing days and moderate winter temperatures. That's mostly USDA growing zones 8 and 9. But hardy kiwi varieties can be grown almost anywhere in the nation, from zones 4 through 9. They produce large clusters of small fruits whose flavor is very similar to the big ones, you know, kind of tropical, kind of pineapple-y, and whose skins are so thin you eat them like the grapes they resemble. They're also incredibly rich in vitamin C. And there are also super hardy varieties that can be grown in almost impossibly chilly regions, all the way down to bitter cold zone 3. But they're all vines, and not just, quote, vines, but rampant vines that grow so quickly and so vigorously that our resident fruit expert, Dr. Lee Reich, warns that they should be pruned several times a season to keep them from overwhelming the property and shading themselves into fruitlessness, although he adds that the super hardy types are much less rampant than the others. Now, kiwi vines do become almost tree-like at their base over time, but a plant that appears to have the form of a tree and hasn't grown much in 4 years may not be a kiwi. So some questioning of the gifter and maybe a visit to the place of purchase may be helpful. It'd be much less suspicious if you had said that the plant was overwhelming the place but hadn't yet bloomed, as it can take a vine 5 years to begin flowering, especially if it isn't being aggressively pruned. And although there are a few self-fruitful varieties, the vast majority of kiwi need a male plant nearby, within 35 feet or so, to pollinate the fruit-bearing females. This is so important, it's boxed and highlighted in the kiwi fruit section of Lee's latest book, Grow Fruit Naturally. Now, the report of blossoms without fruit is a little more troubling. Once male and female vines are both flowering, there should be fruits, if pollinators are present and the male is compatible. Lee explains that the male vine doesn't have to be the exact same species as the girls, but it does have to flower at the same time. Now, if we assume that our North Carolinians have the right kind of guy, their location could be the problem. MapQuest reveals that Emerald Isle lives up to its name. It's a long, thin strip of land that's about 2 miles east of the actual Carolina coastline, a spot out in the ocean that might not host an abundance of native bees. I'm thinking a beehive or hand pollination might be necessary in such an extreme but undoubtedly breathtaking location. Lee adds that kiwi is also wind-pollinated to some degree, so new plants should always be positioned so that the prevailing wind moves from the male towards the females. Lee adds that all kiwi vines need acidic soil, perfect drainage, serious support, lots of pruning, and protection from extreme temperature swings. Keep them away from south-facing walls and other areas that heat up in the winter, he advises, and protect young plants from winter weather as if they were figs their first couple of years. After that, they get pretty tough. Lee adds that one male can service up to 8 females, and that it can be pruned back hard after its flowers fade, as it is a one-trick pony. Now, no matter what type you grow, choose the site well. Read up on the plant's needs and differences, and be prepared to do a lot of pruning and to give the vines a lot of serious support. Every single one of Lee's many books on fruit growing includes detailed instructions on pruning and trellis construction. The edible reward for your labors will be great, he assures us. And he adds that the vines of the hardy and super hardy varieties are so attractive they were first grown solely as ornamentals. Their only real insect enemy is the Japanese beetle, so keep an eye out for those armored invaders. But keep an even sharper eye on your local kitty cats. Lee warns that something in kiwi vines can make catnip look like alcohol-free beer to them, with some felines going so crazy they pull young plants right out of the ground, roots and all. Well, that sure was empowering information about growing your own kiwi, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To carefully review this week's edition, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to toss cats on my kiwi if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse team towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Maybe put the actual subject in the subject line and check voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin Love Train Griffin. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah, not a she-devil, Kazar. The super hardy Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. The hardy Amanda, no relation, McGrath is back from Europe and once again assisting our production. Our frost tender editor is Al Banks. I'm Fruity Mike McGrath, and I'll vine around to see you again next week. What's going on when weed seeds act like Mexican jumping beans? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll examine the explosive weed known as hairy bittercress. Plus your fabulous phone calls.
Mike's abundant and accessible advice helps us to acquire amazing amaryllis, apples, African violets, arbors. Ask and he'll have an answer every Saturday morning at 11 on You Bet Your Garden here on WHYY.
Medford Lee.